It's lovely to see so many people here again this evening. Tonight, we want to think about debt. We have a huge addiction problem in Northern Ireland and the UK. And it's not alcohol, it's not cigarettes, it's not illegal drugs, it's debt. As a nation, as a people, we are addicted to debt. And so the first thing that I want to talk about tonight is the debt binge that as a people we have been on for the past few decades. That's the first thing. We then want to go on and we want to look at why should we borrow? Why might we need to borrow? And I want to look at good reasons to borrow and bad reasons to borrow. And then the question is, where should we borrow? Okay, where are some of the good places to borrow and where are some of the not so good places to borrow? And then I want to look at the ethics of debt. Okay, what does the Bible have to say about debt when we borrow or when we lend? And what are the ethics that govern that? And finally, I want to talk about debt forgiveness. So if you've got a huge debt, how do you get rid of it? Okay. So that's where we're going tonight. So let's talk about this debt binge. We're addicted to debt. Now, some figures up here. Some people like figures, some people don't like figures. But let's try and see how much debt do we have in the UK. Now, the debt I'm talking about tonight is not government debt, and governments borrow lots. It's not the debt of businesses and business people and farmers. They all borrow lots. It's personal debt. It's just ordinary people. Okay? And so in the UK, at this present time, the total debt of individuals is £1.4 trillion. Now, let me bring that into a more understandable sort of figure. That's £28,000 per adult. So for every single person over 18 in the UK, they have this amount of debt. Now, you're sitting there and you may be saying, well, I don't have any of this debt. Okay? And there's lots of people who don't have any of it. So therefore, there must be lots of people who have lots more than £28,000 worth of debt. Okay? When we think of credit cards and overdrafts, and retail finance, when you buy a TV or furniture or clothes on retail finance, on average, the average person in the UK has £3,167 of debt, credit card debt or an overdraft. Now, you're probably saying to yourself, I don't have any of this, and lots of people don't, but there are lots of people who do have lots of it. Okay. And then the most common form of debt is the mortgage. Okay. There are over 11 million mortgages in the UK. And the average mortgage in the UK is £113,549. Now you're saying, I don't have a mortgage that big. And you're right, there's lots of people don't have a mortgage that big. But there's lots of people who do have very large mortgages. Okay? So, we're on a debt binge. There's lots of debt in Northern Ireland and in the UK. Here's some data from the Bank of England, and this shows you how we have grown in love with debt, how we've become more and more addicted to debt over the past two decades. So here's 1993. It's about £400 billion of debt, personal debt. By the time we get to 2007 and up until the present time, it's, what, £1,400 billion of debt. So this huge growth in debt. And what the Bank of England do for us here is they break it up into different colours. So this green bit, that's mortgages. Okay. The blue bit here, that's sort of consumer credit. So that's basically when you buy a car, when you buy furniture, when you buy TV, and you borrow to get it. Okay. And that's grown quite dramatically. And so has credit card debt. Okay. It's grown as well. But the main growth is here. Okay. Secured debt or mortgages. Why has that happened? Well, we all know this story. This is increasing house prices. This is average house prices in the UK. Okay, so we go back to 1985, and the average house in the UK for a first-time buyer was about £25,000. You wouldn't get many houses today for that sort of money. And then that pretty much stayed, hovered around £40,000, and then increases quite dramatically from the late 1990s onwards. And by the time we get up to 2006, 2007, the average first-time buyer house was £140,000. So in the space of a decade, people have to, if you want to buy a house, you have to borrow a lot more money. That's why we get this explosion here. We're addicted to debt. House prices have gone up, you've got to buy a house, you've got to borrow more. We're on this debt binge. What about credit cards? Okay. First credit card in the UK for mass production was the Barclay card. I don't know if many people can remember the Barclay card. It was launched in 1966. Okay. Prior to that, there were credit cards in the UK, but they were really exclusive things. Only the very wealthy had credit cards. Even in the 1960s and 1970s, and into the 1980s, it was really only the very wealthy had credit cards. But then we come to the 1990s, and everyone can get a credit card. In fact, people have more than one credit card. They have lots of credit cards. And you can borrow thousands of pounds on a credit card. Okay. This is part of the debt binge. Here are some statistics from the Bank of England. Credit cards in the UK, 346 purchases every second using a credit card. So that's £17,000 every second. Multiply that by 60, multiply it by 60 again, multiply it by 24, and you get an idea of how much per day. I think it works out at 1 point something trillion per day on credit cards in the UK. And the total debt on credit cards is 57 billion. 57 with nine zeros after it, okay, in the UK. And the average interest rate on a credit card in the UK today is 17.1%. But then we've also got another type of credit or borrowing. Here we go back to the 1940s, 1950s, even the 1930s, and you've got people manufacturing consumer goods. Consumer goods are expensive. This washing machine with the mangle at the end of it, it costs £25 plus £6.05 sales tax. Okay. Very few people have had the money to buy that outright. And so Hoover and the other manufacturers of these developed finance, consumer credit. So you could pay off so much per week. So you get on a hire purchase, you pay it off over 3 years. Every week you go into the store and you pay a little bit off. Or you set up a direct debit and you pay a little bit off. We have it also, here's one of the first American fridges coming into the UK, the English electric fridge back in the 1950s. You know, the surprise of her life and the best, etc., etc. But it was all bought usually on consumer finance. The same with cars. Okay. Here's the Morris Minor 1000 from 1958. And car manufacturers realized this, that if people were going to actually buy these cars, you needed to lend them the money to buy the cars. And then every month they pay a little bit off. And so we've got this huge growth in consumer finance. And it doesn't stop there. Because back in the 1990s, we decided as a country it would be a very good idea if we asked students to pay for their education and to pay for it by borrowing money. Okay, and this is university education. This is the amount of debt, student loan debt in the UK. It's sitting at something like £3.5 billion presently. So let me put that in some sort of context. Last year, there were 950,000 loans made to students in the UK. The average size of the loan was £10,200. That's just for 1 year. So students are leaving university with £30,000 worth of debt to the student loan company, but they've also probably borrowed from banks. We're addicted to debt. We've been on this huge debt binge as a nation. And that has consequences. It is a consequence, first of all, in interest payments, because when you borrow, you've got to pay the interest. And on average, in the UK, every day we're paying £163 million in interest. Put it in another way, the average household in the UK is paying £2,251 per annum in interest payments. Just giving it to the banks, giving it to whoever you're borrowing from. And of course, in some cases, that can create lots of problems. And so we get people entering bankruptcy. So in the UK, every 5 minutes, one person is declared bankrupt. Now, I'm not talking about firms, I'm talking about individuals. They're declared bankrupt. And there's consequences to that. They basically have no money left. Every day in the UK, 79 properties are repossessed. In the UK, at this very moment in time, there's over 250,000 mortgages in arrears. In other words, people have missed payments on their mortgages. They haven't been able to repay their mortgages. That's 250,000 households. Okay, that's a lot of people. Citizens Advice Bureau, who do a great job helping people in debt, they deal with 7,015 new debt problems every single working day in the UK. That's 40,000 new debt problems a week. People who basically can't cope anymore with their debt. So, could this be you? If it is you, please feel free to talk to me afterwards. But what I would be doing anyways, I would be directing you to either one of these two organisations. First of all, the Citizens Advice Bureau, who are based in Ballymena, they're based province-wide. And then we've also got Debt Action NI, which is funded by the Department of Enterprise, Trade and Investment, funded by Stormont, essentially. And what these organisations do is basically help people with debt problems. They help them restructure their debt. So they talk to the banks or to whoever they've borrowed from. They try to restructure the debt and they try and work out a repayment plan to deal with the debt. So if you're struggling with debt, this is where you need to go to start with. That's the debt binge. We're addicted to debt as a nation. Okay, now I want to now ask the question, why do we need to borrow? Why should we borrow? And I want to look at good reasons to borrow, and then I want to look at some not so good reasons to borrow. Okay? Let's think first of all of the good reasons to borrow. And you're going to think this person's nuts up at the front. Chickens and suits. I know we've got a chicken farm here. I'm not talking about chickens. What am I talking about chickens? Well, in the late 1840s, there was a huge potato famine hit Ireland. 1 million people emigrated. 1 million people died because of that potato famine. And during the potato famine, there were these little organisations called loan funds that were established throughout Ireland, different parts, and they actually lent people money. Very poor people, destitute people, they lent them money. And they lent them money to buy chickens. And so they lent people money, they buy a few chickens, the chickens lay eggs, they sell the eggs, they give some of the money back to the loan company. They then had the rest of the money to feed their family. Okay, this is a very, very helpful form of finance. And there's an economist at Harvard University who's looked at this. And he's actually found that if you had one of these loan funds in your village, there was less death due to the famine because of these loan funds. Now, we have these types of organizations today in Africa, in South Asia, India, etc., that lend very poor people some money, not at very high interest rates, just lend them some money to buy a cow, to buy a goat, to buy a chicken. Okay, there's a good reason to borrow. Suits. I know people who've borrowed money to buy suits to go for job interviews. To get a job, you need a suit to look smart. If you don't have the money to buy a suit, you need to borrow. And that's what some of my friends have done. I also have one friend who borrowed money to buy a suit because he joined the Jehovah's Witnesses and everyone at the Jehovah's Witnesses Kingdom Hall wore a suit. Not such a good idea to buy, to borrow. Okay? But some people borrow for suits. Education. Okay? Usually, education is a good reason to borrow. Okay? But you have to be very careful. You have to ask yourself the question, am I borrowing too much? Is it going to be worth it at the end of the day? Okay, those are really careful questions that people need to ask. And if you're 18 years old, that's a very difficult thing to figure out. And so you need help figuring that out. But education can be a good reason to buy it. Mortgages, to buy a house. Okay. Now, let me explode here some myths. There's a myth that it's always better to buy than rent. Okay, that's only in the UK that we have that sort of myth. In the rest of continental Europe, people don't believe that. People are happy to rent. Okay. Renting can be better than buying. Okay. Houses are not investments. Last week we looked at investments. Investments provide income. They provide a return. When you buy a house, and anyone who has a house, you know it's not an investment. It doesn't provide any return. In fact, it costs you money to maintain it. You need to paint it. You need to get new guttering put in place. You've got to, like, window cleaning. You've got to maintain it. And it deteriorates over time. Houses are not investments. Now, the land on which the house is built may appreciate slowly over time. Historically, land appreciates about 1% of its value each year. But the house doesn't. It's just bricks and mortar which need to be maintained. You also need to think, if you're borrowing, about your income, your future changes. I know a lot of people, and they borrow to buy a house, they really overextend themselves. They borrow extreme multiples of their income, and they're really stretched. And they have got over half of their income each month going out to pay their mortgage. And if they get a pay cut, if something happens to them, they're in danger. So you also want to think about your income levels. And don't overextend yourself. Start small. If you want to get on the property market, start at the bottom, start small. Also ask yourself the question, is the house value likely to fall? Now, one rule of thumb here is to say to yourself, okay, if I was to buy this house, I was to let it out, how much money would I make per annum from letting it out? Take that figure, divide it by the price you're going to pay for the house, and if you can earn more money by putting it into a bank account, don't buy the house. Okay, it's overvalued. Okay. Here's Northern Ireland, house prices. Okay. This is an index of house prices, which in 2002 was equal to 100. By the time we get to 2007, it's 280. In other words, house prices trebled in the space of 5 years in Northern Ireland, and you all know this. Okay. And then we've had this collapse. And if you bought somewhere up here, and you borrowed money up here, you probably now have your mortgage is way more than the value of your house. And that's a big problem for a lot of people. And so when you're buying a house, you want to think about, are we in this sort of situation here? Not easy to see. Some bad reasons to borrow. Christmas. You know, I was in, what shop was it the other day? Sainsbury's. And, you know, they're beginning to line up the Christmas stuff. I was in the spa at the end of the village. And at the sweetie counter, they're beginning, the Christmas chocolates are out. Celebrations. 6 million people in the UK borrow to fund Christmas. And they borrow an average of £1,000. We have created such a culture that basically we force people to feel that they have to borrow. There's all this pressure in society that you must do this at Christmas. And so people then go out and borrow. Not a good idea to do that. There's also consumption of non-necessities. Some people borrow to go on holiday. Now, in some cases, that may be a necessity. If someone's ill or there's, you know, I've got mental health issues, that may be a necessity. But in the vast majority of cases, holidays are not necessities. Okay? Weddings. People today borrow to fund their weddings. Weddings cost tens of thousands of pounds. And people borrow to fund the wedding. That's not a necessity. Lower the scale of it. Okay? Bring it within your budget. Don't borrow to have a wedding. Non-essential household appliances. The bigger TV. The faster washing machine. There's these washing machines today, apparently, that can wash clothes in 15 minutes. Okay, they cost like four figures or something like that. But, you know, don't borrow. If you don't have the money, don't borrow to buy these things. Wait until you do have the money. We live in this world that's obsessed with material things, and we don't want to get caught up in that. And when people do get caught in that, they feel they have to borrow to have it now. Okay. So those are some bad reasons to borrow. What about where? So you need to borrow money. Where should you go? Well, some good places to borrow, and then I'm going to talk about some bad places to borrow. Banks, pretty good places to go. Building societies, credit unions, and I'm a big fan of credit unions. There's one in Ballymena. And we've also got this. This has been renamed, sort of like got an Ulster Scots sort of twinge. There's William, our Ulster Scots speaker at the back. He'll correct it. Slemish Nana Tabreid Credit Union or something along those lines. Those are good places to borrow. What about a credit card? Is a credit card a good way to borrow? Okay, well, I've approached several institutions trying to borrow money. So I went to the Nationwide Building Society. I said, I want £500 for 6 months. I'm going to repay it back each month. And monthly repayments come out at £84. The total interest paid on that £500 in 6 months is only £9.08. The interest rate I'm paying, this is called the annual percentage rate. This measure is basically allows you to compare interest rates and across different products. Okay? So for the Nationwide, it's 6.2%. If I go to my credit card provider, Visa, my monthly repayment will be £87.51. My interest paid will be £25. My interest rate will be 17%. And here's the problem with the credit card. I don't have to pay this back each month. With the Building Society, I have to pay that back each month. With the credit card, I don't have to pay that back. I just pay a very small amount. And very quickly, I can amass thousands of pounds on my credit card. And people do amass thousands of pounds worth of debt on several different credit cards. And they're paying 17% per annum on that debt. That's expensive. It's a very expensive way to borrow. So don't borrow on credit cards. Bad places to borrow. Loan sharks. Loan sharks are illegal. But you can go into Ballymena tonight and there will be loan sharks going around the doors. You go into North Belfast, you will find loan sharks. And they're essentially dominated by paramilitary groups. And the paramilitary groups are very good at getting their money back because they've got means and ways of encouraging people to repay their debt. Okay? Loan sharks, a bad place to go. Do not ever go near loan sharks. Pawnbrokers. Okay, and pawnbrokers sort of died a death. They were very common back in the 19th century. You know, people took in goods and they got money in exchange for those goods, or they could borrow against goods. They took in rings and watches. Pawnbrokers still do that today, but you can actually borrow from pawnbrokers. And then we've got payday lenders such as Wonga. So let me, again, I went to cash converters. So here's borrowing £500 for 6 months from a building society. My interest over the 6 months was £9, 6.2%. I went to cash converters. I asked them for £500. My monthly repayment, £152. My total interest paid, £417. So I'm basically paying as much in interest as I am borrowing. The interest rate from cash converters, and you know this because it's a high street store, is 855%. Now here's the thing. People who can borrow at the Nationwide will never borrow at cash converters. Who borrows from cash converters? People who are desperate. People who are poor. People who don't have enough money. And this is exploitation. This is taking advantage of very poor people. 855%. You think that's bad? I then went to Wonga. And you've all heard of Wonga on television. Is it Newcastle? Yeah. How that ended up? Okay. So, now Wonga is known as... Here's how a payday lender works. You run out of money, your next payday lender, and you borrow. And then you payday lender once you get... Okay, so that's how Wonga rates. And so I wanted to borrow £100 for 18 days. That was going to be in interest, £33.49. I could borrow £500 from the Nationwide 6 months, and it was only going to cost me money. So £150 for 18 days. The interest rate on that is 853. Who uses this? It's the poor. It's people who've got other... who are desperate. Again, these payday lenders, they're taking advantage. So, where to borrow? Not from payday lenders, not brokers, building societies. Briefly about the ethics. Okay, so, where to borrow, why we should borrow, but what about the ethics of debt? What does the Bible say about borrowing? Two principles for borrowers and one principle for lenders. Two principles for borrowers. Debt leads to bondage. Debt leads to bondage. Book of Proverbs. We're studying this in our worship services in church. The Book of Proverbs. And Proverbs 22, verse 7, the borrower is the slave of the lender. When you've borrowed money, the bank, the building society, whoever's lent it to, they own you. They can do anything to you within the law to get the money back. In some cases, if the lender's illegal, they'll go beyond the law. Okay? You're the slave of the lender. And literally, in the past, this was the case. If you were unable to repay your debts, you were sold into slavery. Up until 140 years ago in this country, you could be thrown into prison if you didn't repay your debts. Anyone who's read Charles Dickens, you'll have read of debtors' prisons. Okay? This is where people went when they couldn't pay their debts. Now, the wealthy, when they couldn't pay their debts, they weren't thrown into debtors' prisons. Charles Dickens' point was that it was only the poor who were pushed into these prisons. So remember that. When you borrow, there's bondage. Okay? Second, debt should be repaid. Psalm 37, verse 21. The wicked borrows, but does not pay back. Here is a fundamental ethic of debt. Repay your debts. And I know of Christian businessmen, their businesses have got into trouble. Even though legally they're not required to repay the debt, they've sought to repay those debts. Why? because the wicked don't repay, but the righteous does repay their debt. So that's two principles for borrowers. But there's one principle here for lenders. Don't exploit the vulnerable. So the law in the Old Testament, a lot of people think the law is sort of against love. Okay? But if you want to love people, the law helps you understand how you go about doing that. And the law is full of these wonderful things, such as, if you lend money to any of my people with you who is poor, you shall not be like the money lender to him, and you shall not exact interest from him. You shall not exact 5,855%. You shall give it to the poor, and you shall help them. Don't exploit them. And so that's to us as individuals, but it's also to banks. So Wonga is morally wrong. We talked last week about ethical investment. I would never invest in Wonga because it's exploiting people. The Church of England actually discovered that it was investing in Wonga. Okay, but it basically then said, no, we can't. Because once it realized what Wonga was doing. Okay, so we don't exploit the vulnerable. So that's something on the ethics of debt. Finally, I want to talk about debt forgiveness. What if you have so much debt that you can never repay it? Imagine being in that position. You've got millions of pounds worth of debt, and there's just no way you're ever going to be repaid. What can you do? How can you repay that debt? Well, this is exactly what Jesus was thinking about when he said the Lord's Prayer, when he taught his disciples the Lord's Prayer. Because if you remember, in the Lord's Prayer, he taught his disciples to pray this way, and pray to God your Father, and forgive us our debts. Wipe away our debts. Do away with our debts. Take that millions of pounds that we owe you, God, and take it away. What debt do we owe God? Well, we owe God because we've sinned. And it's a debt we can't repay. We can't fix that. We owe him so much. We have let him down. We've rebelled. We've sinned against him every day. And we have this huge debt. And it's impossible for us to repay it. But it is possible to have it forgiven. It is possible to have it removed from us. Now, how is that possible? Well, in the book of Ephesians, chapter 1 and verse 7, Paul writes about Jesus, and he says, in him, or in Jesus, we have redemption through his blood, the forgiveness of our sins. The New Testament writers are using a word that was associated with debt. Forgiveness of debts. How do we get it? It's through his blood. Now, what does that mean? Well, that's a shorthand way of telling us what Jesus did on the cross. Because when he was on the cross, he was paying the debts of his people. There's this verse in Philemon, chapter 1, verse 18. Philemon was a slave owner. His slave, Onesimus, ran away. And Paul writes to Philemon, he says, Onesimus is coming back, and if he has wronged you at all, or if he owes you anything, charge that to my account. And that's exactly what Jesus did on the cross. He said to God the Father, you see that the debt that John Turner owes you? You see those sins that he has committed? Charge that to my account. I'll pay the debt. And you see, we can have the greatest debt that we face forgiven. We may have owed the bank hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands of pounds, but we've got a greater debt. That's our sin. And we can go to God our Father and say, forgive us our sins. And when we ask him, he'll do it. He'll wipe out the debt. Zero debt.